Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Prepare Radio with your host, Diane Thomas.
Radio. This is Diane Thomas, your host, and it is Monday night, so we are talking about practical Christianity. Does what you believe work? Our main goal for talking about practical Christianity is to really bring a lot of our doctrines and theology into the realm of practicality. Not just believing the right things. Does it make sense? Does it help us to know God? Does it help us to overcome those things that are in our lives so that we can overcome them? In order to really make the best use of our time here on this earth, we need to know what we are to be about while we're here on this earth. And one of the things that seems to be a very widespread and long-term distraction is our language. Throughout time, throughout history, we all do it. We hide behind our terms. We hide behind language. We throw terms out and, you know, here in the U.S., we're in a political season, and there's very little calling out on what do you mean by that. You know, some are, you know, running on this, you know, this stand or that stand, or, you know, we want change or hope or, whatever the particular, you know, terminology is. We're going to look out for the little guy. We're going to make life better for you. And in politics, hopefully, we recognize that. If a vacuum cleaner salesman came to your door and wanted to do a demonstration and you let him in and he started to give you a spiel about how you were a bad person if your carpets were dirty, hopefully you'd recognize that. He's selling you a bill of goods. He's going to try to manipulate you into doing something that would benefit him. He's going to make you feel bad, feel guilty, try to at least, or convince you in one way, shape, or form, even and maybe through a demonstration, show you how much dirt's in your carpet. But hopefully you will recognize that he has a vested interest in manipulating you. So, you know what? Your carpets may be dirty. Does that make you a bad person? Does it make you a bad parent? And though, you know, those are decisions that you can make without buying the gentleman's vacuum cleaner. But we take his intent, we take the fact that he gets something out of us, feeling guilty, feeling bad or being manipulated. He is the one who benefits, not us. So in politics, the same thing happens. And we need to be as discerning in politics and in religion. What does the other person get out of us feeling guilty or bad or drawing some kind of conclusion based on what we're being taught? So part of our goal is to look at some of the foundational and fundamental doctrines and beliefs that are commonly held in a broad sense by looking at some language. And rather than coming up against the language and saying this word shouldn't, you know, as people are using, excuse me, for instance, the term faith, people are using the word faith wrong, and this is what it really means. Or people are using the word reconciliation wrong, and this is what it really means. Instead, we want to present what we believe the Lord has, what the Lord has shown us. Our goal is to just simply share that with you, put it out there in common terms. You shouldn't have to learn a whole other language to know God. You shouldn't have to learn. You shouldn't have to go to college. You shouldn't have to buy a dictionary and a lexicon and all these, you know, a Strong's Concordance in order to have a relationship with a living God. If he's not able to reveal himself without these things, when we look at how, in the scheme of things, how short-lived the books that we rely on when they were published, are we thinking that nobody was a Christian before these books were published? Or they weren't able to be as deep a Christian as we are? Or what do people say? Well, God's going to hold them accountable for what they had available then, just like God's going to hold us accountable for what we have available to us. And that's where we want to go. Okay, let's look at what are we saying? Hold accountable. To what? On what grounds? On what standards? Do we really think God is judging us based on what we believe? Or didn't he already judge us all 2,000 years ago? And now we have that stamp in our forehead, redeemed. Now we are sons of God. We don't have to be held accountable to anything. It's already been done. All the accounting has been done. You are now a co-inheritor, an inheritance. You have the inheritance. You don't need to qualify for it. And the point being is that we want to stop and look at our assumptions. We want to stop and look at, as God brings these things to the surface, why am I using that term? What does it really mean to me? And does what I think it means, is that real to me? Is it really what I think God really thinks about me? So these are some of the things we're looking at under practical Christianity. What are some of the things that we believe that if we really stopped and took a look at them, really don't fit in with who God really is and who we really are? And then, what is the truth? So we stop. God puts a speed bump in our mind, in our heart, or in our lives, in our behavior. Wait, don't think that. Don't feel that. Don't stop. Just give yourself a second. When you hit that speed bump, and God, what is that? What am I thinking? What am I feeling? Why am I feeling manipulated? Why am I feeling angry? Why am I feeling, you know, or why do I want to run from this person or punch him in the nose? And when we start recognizing the attempts at manipulation, the attempts at coercion, the attempts at guilt that often are, unfortunately, a way to get what religious leaders want from us. And that even that varies quite a bit. Some, you know, need us to do their volunteer work. Some need to be in the church so they have a bigger church. Or of course the money or the recognition. we aren't accountable for what they believe. When God puts a speed bump in your life, slow down. Pay attention. We don't have to go looking for it. He will provide the speed bumps. It's just when that speed bump occurs, we want to stop. We want to go, okay, now what's wrong? What's slowing me down here? God, what are you drawing my attention to? And allow him to teach you and bring his truth to the surface so that that truth will shine the lights on those things that you've been believing that you now have you no longer need. You have the truth. You no longer need the lies. And one of the areas we've been talking about is the whole concept of time. We all know that time is part of our lives, and it's also part of our beliefs. We think about past, present, and future, that certain things happened in the past that affect our present, and many of the things, decisions we're making now are because we have anticipation for the future. But what if we're wrong? What if what we think about the future is not accurate? Would that affect, and how would it affect, what we're doing now? And we're not going to get into it too much, but just that's an example of why we want to look at some of the things that we have built our belief system around as it relates to time. Now, last week we were talking about in the beginning and Adam and Eve's perspective of time. And when they were first created, we have no idea how long any given day was. We have no idea how long they were in the garden. And we have no idea what their concept of time was. They were living in the spirit. Now, even though the earth may have been going around the sun just as it is now, and a day was as the same length as it is now, because they were living in the spirit, they might not have and probably didn't have any concept of time whatsoever. They probably didn't have any concept of day or night, night or day, hunger or thirst. They didn't. Their physical bodies were the last thing they were aware of. Now, you and I, most of it, that's where we start very often. When we're meeting someone new, the first impression we make is based on their physical appearance. But that's not the way it was when Adam and Eve were communing with God in the garden. And we have no idea how long they were in the garden. Excuse me. But we do know that at a certain point in time, excuse me, God kicked them out. So we know that at a certain point in time, excuse me here, folks, okay. Okay, we'll choke through this here a little bit. Okay, but we do know that at a certain point in time, God kicked them out of the garden. During the time they were in the garden, certain rules applied. They were not to eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil. They could eat of all the other trees, any other tree. And since that's the case, and the tree of life was in the garden, there's no reason to assume that they did not eat of the tree of life. So they're eating the tree of life. They're eating of all the other trees, whatever trees they were there. but they were not eating of the tree of knowledge of good and evil because God had told them not to. Some point in time, and when we think about, okay, what do we know about that situation when Adam and Eve ate of the tree of knowledge of good and evil? Moses wrote that. Okay, in Genesis, Moses wrote that. He wasn't there. Okay, so when we don't want to get so circumspect and dogmatic about what Moses wrote, we want to take that to God. We want to take that to our living, present God and let him speak life to us. In other words, what do we need to know about this now? What is important about this now? And as we do that, we can release whatever preconceptions we might have about what happened and let him make whatever is real, real. He gets to decide what we need to know because he's doing our training. So first they could eat of all the other trees, including the tree of life, but they couldn't eat of that one tree. Then they did eat of it. After they had eaten of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, God set a new boundary to keep them from going back and eating of the tree of life. We could say that just at that point in time, when God set that new boundary, that was the beginning of a new age. What was okay one day was not okay the next. The rules had changed. God's expectations of their behavior had changed. And that's always a good way to judge or to start to look at where one age begins and another ends. So though the specifics between one age and the next vary, we can see that pattern of, you know, one thing being okay one day and it not being okay the next, or vice versa, where something's not okay one day and is okay the next. That pattern is repeated as one time period or one age transitions into the next. So we can say that the following age was much more related to, or time periods, because sometimes these, you know, we look at some of these ages and they merge one into the next, or they overlap. So we aren't going to get too technical as far as being specific about, okay, this is where one age began and this is where the next one started. But in general, what we want to look at is how is God relating to his people, his creation, by his expectations, and how he has set those boundaries for us to relate to him. So we could say the next time frame dealt with every man's heart, every man's expectations, and every man's motivations. So during the age of knowledge, everyone did what their own personal knowledge told them to do, what their own personal knowledge told them was right or wrong. During this time period, there were judges, priests, kings, prophets, seers, and all kinds of other leaders God would occasionally raise up in order to instruct and guide his people. Over time, the list of boundaries or laws expanded exponentially to include everything from what to eat, how to treat one another, how to worship and relate to God, and even how to go to war. When God instituted a law, through whatever means, it was at that point in time that the people were held accountable. One day, an activity was legal. It was okay. It was legal to do. The next day, or sometimes the next moment, it was illegal or not okay. The age of knowledge, we could also call it the age of law, was in effect until every statute was fulfilled in reality, literally fulfilled. And that moment occurred at the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. Every boundary, law, and requirement was necessary because man could not know God on God's terms. God's terms are limitless. He is eternal. He is boundless. The boundaries are for us, not for God. So the boundaries and laws and requirements were necessary for us because we were, because of the fall, not boundless. We needed structure to bring us to God, and for many other reasons which we won't go into. But because he was limitless, he had known us in Adam according to that spirit life. But when that spirit life in Adam was lost, that true communion, that true oneness, knowing God spirit to spirit, was also lost. So through that age of knowledge or that age of law, the only relationship with God that was possible was based on knowledge, boundaries. So at the crucifixion, those laws, those boundaries were fulfilled. Those boundaries were no longer necessary, because we could then become, once again, limitless, boundaryless. We could know God on his terms. He made it possible for us to know him on his terms, according to his nature, which is spirit. So then what followed, in general, is the age of transition. For our purposes, we're going to refer to this particular transition time as a separate age, since the events that create the age itself are of such significance. On one end, its beginning, the beginning of the age of transition, is the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, by which the full debt of the law was paid. Remember, the Father didn't forgive the debt. It was a real debt and had to be paid in reality. Okay? The debt, your debt was not forgiven. It was paid for. If you owed $1 million to the bank, God didn't come along and say and talk to the bankers and say, well, just forgive the debt. He paid the bank $1 million and whatever interest was due. So your debt was paid and has now been stamped paid in full. That's why it's ludicrous for any of us to think that God thinks about that debt. He knows it's been paid because he's the one who paid it. He's like, why are you worrying about this? Get over it. It's been paid. But so many of us, we still want to pay it ourselves. But it has been paid in full. Jesus' sinless death was the full payment necessary to finish the law, to fulfill the demands and requirements of the law. The temple veil, that boundary separating God from man, was torn in two. Permanently. One day, God's people were sacrificing animals in the temple, and it was an acceptable form of worship to atone for their sins. The very next day, the day of the resurrection, that same sacrifice was no longer acceptable or sufficient as atonement for sin. Now, God had given them that law. God had given them that requirement. In order to be my people, you must follow these laws, including make these sacrifices on these particular days. So God had instituted those laws. He said, you must do this, this, and this. But then he said, you can stop now. I've taken care of everything that you were doing temporarily has now been done permanently. I've taken care of it. But if they didn't know, they would continue to make those same sacrifices, even though they were no longer acceptable to God, and they were no longer necessary. They no longer fulfilled that relational requirement. Because what was ushered in next was the age of grace. So even though the age of grace had risen with Jesus Christ, most of mankind was still not ready for it. As great and awesome and wonderful as the crucifixion was, it only concluded God's purpose for that time period. It finished one thing. It didn't start anything new. What did Jesus say on the cross? It is finished. It wasn't until the resurrection that the tree of life, eternal life, the life of God, was once again made available to any who were without sin. Okay, let me repeat that. It wasn't until the resurrection that eternal life was made available to all who were without sin. Now, at the crucifixion, if Jesus paid for all sin, who was without sin? Everyone. And since God is not bound by time, not only everyone who was alive at that time, but alive before that time and alive after that time. So it was at his resurrection that he made eternal life available to all. So it was this tree of life, Jesus, which changed the very nature of man, making him a brand new creature, not just a changed creature, a new one that had never walked on this earth. So we will pick it up there. Have a great evening, And we will be back together at 6:30 tomorrow evening. I will talk to you then. If you've got any questions, feel free to drop me a line. Thanks for tuning in. This has been Diane Thomas of Prepare Radio. Have a great evening.